Welcome to Season 9, Episode 27 of the Ubuntu Podcast. It's Tuesday the 30th of August, and we're going to be discussing what's been happening in the news and the community. I'm Martin, and joining me this week are Mark.
Hello.
Hello, Mark. Laura.
Hello.
Hello, and Alan.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello. So how is everyone?
Tickety-boo.
You all have a good bank holiday weekend?
Yes, indeed.
Thank you.
Yeah, well rested.
Warm.
Not really very well rested,
but it's definitely warm. Yeah, not at all hurried in preparing for a show at the last minute or anything. So, Alan, what have you been up to since last time?
I've been using something called Charles, which what? I'd never heard of before.
Prince?
It's a piece of it's a piece of software. And I think it's Java based. It looks Java-y. It looks old and crusty and Java-y, but it works really, really well. The idea of it is you use it as a proxy server to man in the middle SSL connections and analyze the traffic. And that's exactly what I did. I had a game on my Android phone, and I told my Android phone to connect to Charles that's running on my laptop, and I intercepted all the traffic that was going between the game and the game server, because I wanted to see what kind of traffic was being sent backwards and forwards. And it was quite an interesting learning exercise.
Does this work on all SSL traffic, or just those clients that don't properly assert the trust relationship between you and the upstream server?
It works on applications that don't properly check the certificate.
Right.
Most like properly written applications it wouldn't work with, but for this particular application I was looking at, I knew it was a bit of an amateurish piece of software, so I would be able to intercept it, and I did, and it was quite interesting to learn, you know, what data it sends back and forth, and yeah. I understand a bit more about, you know, why the game behaves in the way that it does. It was just quite an interesting research thing that I wanted to do. And I found it interesting. And Charles is a bit of software. There's a free version that runs for 30 days, and then you can pay to upgrade to the, like, you know, proper version if you want to. The free version was enough for me, but it works so well, I'm considering paying for it because it works really, really well. It's really good.
Excellent. Laura, what have you been up to?
Mostly been on holiday. I went to the Lake District last weekend, and it rained a lot and had no electricity in the static caravan I was staying in until we left, and then the electricity started working again and the sun came out.
Well, that sounds like a fun holiday.
Yeah, actually it was pretty cool because I cycled around Lake Windermere.
Yeah. Did you go to Wat Endlath? No.
Apparently not.
Okay. But I did cycle 60 kilometres, which I'm very proud about.
Yeah,
so this
absolutely.
Weekend we went to Sussex and had a swimming pool and lots of sunshine, which was brilliant.
That sounds better.
Yeah, it does. And did the electricity work?
Yeah.
Result.
Yeah.
There's a lesson to be learned about not going to the north where they don't have power and it rains all the time, but I think maybe.
Yeah, I think we will.
Send your hate mail to alan@ubuntupodcast.org.
Still, right. I cycled 60 kilometres.
Yes, well done, Laura.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Have you got running with mummy legs now?
Huh?
No? When you used to get dragged around the shops by your mum, you know, and you get back and your legs just absolutely aching. I used to call it running with mummy legs, you know, being dragged around Marks and Spencers, looking at all the dresses and stuff. No? Okay.
Just your school uniform.
Just you.
Send your feedback about running with mummy legs to martin@podcast.org.
I'd suggest you don't Google it.
Oh.
Should we get on with it?
Yes.
And now it's time for the news. And first up, the Fedora Engineering and Steering Committee have decided once again that Fedora will use Wayland by default in the next release.
Which next release is that?
This is
24, the one that's just
25.
Come out?
25.
Ah, okay.
Which is currently scheduled for the 28th of November. 8th of November. 8th of November.
Mm-hmm. Should we go back through all of our show notes and see how many times we've mentioned that Fedora are going to have Wayland in the... as the default in the next release? I mean, it's probably we've only mentioned it 3 or 4 times, but we do make a bit of a big deal about it every time we do.
And this has the caveat that the release notes and common bugs list has to be clear about how to switch back to X11 if needed.
Yes.
Right. Which is fair, because, you know, it doesn't work for every, you know, use case. I'm sure there are going to be some applications that will require X11 or, you know, some complex, something that needs some dependency of X, like, you know, even screen recording or some weird input device or something will need X, no doubt, sure.
So it does sound as if they're a little bit serious about this, in the fact that they've now made a note that it has to be clearly documented in the release notes that nobody ever reads, by the way, as from the point of view of a distro maintainer and the hours I pour into my release notes that nobody pays a blind bit of attention to. But it does imply that maybe this is the one that they actually do it in. So, Mark, are you feeling odds on favourite to claim a victory for your
just
prediction?
As long as no one else does it as well, I'm in.
What was your exact prediction?
That one distro on the top five of DistroWatch would have either Wayland or Mir as the default.
And what are the top five?
Right, everyone, go to DistroWatch, click on the distro that cannot be named, vote it up to five, push Fedora down.
You're assuming that there's some sane metric behind what's the top five on DistroWatch.
Okay.
But does Marte have it?
No. We'll only support that sort of thing via Xmir and Xwayland.
Okay.
In other news, Microsoft have open sourced their PowerShell command line interpreter and released it for Linux and Mac OS. And apparently there was much rejoicing because this was something that everybody needed. Everyone needed a new shell, and Microsoft came along and saved the day and released theirs as free software.
Right.
So Martin, admin-y person, is this cool?
I feel horribly disarmed to answer that question because I've never used the PowerShell.
I have.
So I know you have, and that's why I'm deferring to you right now.
On Windows, before I worked for Canonical, when I worked on Windows systems, I did use PowerShell a bit. And some
it's been
of
around that long?
Yeah, it's been around a long time.
Really?
And it's got some nice features, like, you know, similar things that you would do with multiple commands on the Linux command line. For example, find all the music files in my folder. You'd use like find maybe or ls or something like that. And then you'd pipe that to some other command in order to extract some data, like the file names and the file sizes. And then you pipe it to some other command to sort them. And then you pipe it to some other command. And so, you know, the Unix philosophy of having all these little individual commands chained together, in PowerShell, all of that is done within PowerShell. So you would run one command with a bunch of switches, and it's quite cunning. There's a nice example that I'll put in the link in the show notes, where you can type this one command that will recurse through all the music in your music folder, extract the artist and the album name and maybe the file size or duration or something like that. And then with one final thing, it'll spit out a CSV file. And it's quite nice to be able to do that with just one line, to go and like interrogate a source of data. In this case, it's a directory listing, but it could be something more interesting than that. But it's quite a powerful tool in and of itself, in the same way that Unix chaining lots of commands together is powerful.
And in that example, if you tried to do that with the traditional tools that are available in CMD, it would be hell on earth. So yes, it's clearly an improvement. And as I understand it, it's not like Bash. It is kind of this task-driven environment, is how I understand it, reading about it from afar.
Yeah, it's more like a shell to it's a shell to a bunch of very powerful commands that are built into one overarching command, which is PowerShell.
So
one interesting thing about it, which differs it slightly from what we're probably used to in the sort of Unixy world, is that whereas like Bash works by you can take a command and it'll output a stream of text, and then you can pipe that into another command which will take in a stream of text and do something with it. With PowerShell, it's using .NET objects, so a command can actually output a data object which can be accepted by another command which you pipe it into, which lets you do slightly more complex things or slightly more flexible things. I saw an example, someone pointed out that sorting in Bash a lot of things, you can't just pipe it to the sort command. You have to have the sorting built into the command you're using, because Bash doesn't have a concept of data tables, for example.
Yeah, okay, so it's a common way of parsing objects.
Yeah.
Nice.
It's pretty cool. I don't think I'll use it every day, but the fact that it is there and it is a tool we can use, it's like, you know, in the same way that I don't use Zshell or Fish or anything like that, the fact that they're there and they're available and I could use them if I wanted to is a good thing. And they're open source on GitHub, so you can go and, you know, build it yourself if you want to. It's cool.
Yeah. Next up, Firefox 49 for Linux will let you watch Netflix without plugins.
What, like you can in other browsers?
Like, yes. You've been able to do in Chrome, like, forever. I'm really surprised it's taken Firefox so long to implement this, but I'm delighted to see that it's just around the corner now.
How do they do this?
It's using the same DRM module that's in Chrome at the moment. So it's this Widevine DRM module. I don't quite know how they've come to use that. I'm imagining Google and their partners have opened it up to some extent so that they can make use of it.
Well, it's not open in terms of, it doesn't get built into Firefox. Firefox has the ability to go and get grab it.
Yeah.
Right. An extension kind of thing.
Yeah, which is how, you know, Flash used to do DRM protected content back in the day, or still in some cases. You would have Flash installed, you would have DRM protected content, and Flash would go off and pull down the module that was required to your local environment, and then that module was then sort of made available to the Flash plugin so that it could then do the decryption.
It's not just Netflix either, is it? It's Amazon.
Yeah. I'm really pleased about this, because one of the only reasons I have Chrome installed on my computer is so that when the mood takes me, I can watch Netflix and Amazon on my Linux machine. I'd rather do it in Firefox, where more of it is open than on Chrome.
Super stuff.
And Google has confirmed their intention to penalise websites displaying those really annoying full-screen popover adverts on mobile.
These are the things that pop over the content that you're trying to read, and sometimes they take a while to load, so you're halfway through reading the thing, then you get smacked in the face with an advert.
Hi, yes. Looks like you don't want to subscribe to our newsletter.
Well, it's not, there's those ones, and then there's the ones that are just adverts, and then they expand to be the full phone screen, and then you're trying to find the X, which is always in a different place, because somehow
there
they
is
think
no
that,
X.
because they think that by annoying you and not letting you find the X quickly enough, you might be paying attention to what's in the ad.
Whereas all you're doing is rage quitting the website and saying, I'm never coming back.
Yeah, which damages the website, because I feel bad then, some
the
of the articles.
That do this as well. Also, there's that subtle delay. You're like three paragraphs in and then the thing appears. So I do agree, those adverts are excellently annoying.
Yeah, so when I started reading this, my first thought was, okay, so Google's going to downrate in its search results things that have these intrusive ads. And so my first thought was, that's a bit rich, really, because Google's got ads. They make the money out of ads. Exactly. So why should everybody else not get to have ads? It's kind of up to Google who gets to get paid by ads. It's not actually all of these pop-ups.
It's only the ones that Google aren't serving.
Yeah, only the ones that Google think are really annoying, which, to be fair, are the ones probably that are really annoying. So it's quite hard to say this is a bad thing, but on the other hand, it feels a bit like Google's getting to choose who gets to make money off adverts.
That was my thought as well. It does feel a bit like that. And if you just pull out some of the words from that headline and read them back, it would have been a far more interesting headline, which is Google penalised websites displaying adverts.
Yeah.
Google penalised websites displaying adverts that are not from Google.
Well, the ones they've said that they're not going to penalise are things like where it's a legal obligation, like if you're doing age verification or you've got to display a cookie warning because that's the law, honest gov. But they haven't said that, oh, here's some examples of adverts which we would accept. It's all about, like, things where you would be able to see the content and Google has indexed the content, but when you click on it, you see an advert instead. I think that's what they're trying to fight against.
Which is fair enough.
It is fair enough, but still.
I'm a little bit skeptical about how even-handedly this will be implemented.
Next up, the Intel Dual Board, targeted at Internet of Things and robotics devices, is to be powered by Ubuntu Core.
Ooh.
Ooh.
What's the Intel Dual Board?
So I think we've spoken about several Intel boards, like embedded boards in the past, but this one I think is a bit more higher end than their previous offerings. So this has got a quad-core Atom processor, Intel HD graphics, Wi-Fi, USB, and GPIO pins, and the various other funny little connectors that you get for programming and connecting up sensors and so on.
Right.
So this is Intel's MakerBoard, as I saw it pitched in one of the articles. It may well have been in Intel's own press release.
Yes.
Yeah, it specifically seems to be targeted at AR. AR?
Augmented reality.
AR.
Oh, okay.
Oh, I didn't see that.
But I suppose
that bit.
Because it's got quite good graphics capabilities as well.
Yeah, so the article I read about it was that the demos were doing some AI thing, but okay. I can't remember any more than that. So we'll put the links in the show notes and you can go read for yourself.
I saw some articles referring to this as a Raspberry Pi killer, and I'm thinking, I'm not surprised it's a Raspberry Pi killer. It's like 10 times more expensive.
Yeah, it's like $370.
Exactly.
Right, yes.
So it's
a PC.
Cheap. And the whole it's a maker board for $370.
Yeah.
I'm not sure who these makers are, but maybe the AR angle makes sense, because I'm not going to solder anything to something with my shonky soldering skills that costs nearly $400 and risk frying the thing. Whereas I'll quite happily burn through a couple of Raspberry Pis before I decide maybe I need to go back to night school and learn how to solder properly. But
interesting bit from the Ubuntu Insights blog where I saw this was they referred to Ubuntu in this context as Ubuntu Core, also known as Snappy. So they're still bang on the money with that branding.
So when I was at the Snappy Sprint, there were a bunch of different rooms where you could go into to have the various meetings and the sessions. And a couple of the rooms were kind of reserved for like private meetings, but they could also be used for, breakout sessions. And I joined a session which was to talk about the Raspberry Pi, and I strolled into this room, which was full of people from Canonical who I didn't know, and very hastily, somebody who seemed to be in charge ushered everybody out of the room and said we should go to another room. And I thought, I've heard about this phenomenon. There is something in this room I shouldn't see. So I cast around very quickly to see what I could see. And I saw one of these on the table in the middle of the room. All I could make out was that it was clearly an Intel thing and it was about the size of a Raspberry Pi. And that was, I had a couple of seconds to take that in. I had no idea what it is. But
did you also make out the gold leaf and the diamond encrusted connectors?
Which would explain the $370 price point. Yeah, so, I knew there was something coming, but when I saw this in the news articles, I was like, I know what that is, or rather I've seen one of those.
Awesome. Google is killing Chrome apps on Windows, Mac, and Linux. Is that because nobody uses them? Probably.
Pretty much.
Yeah. On their blog, the Vice President of Product Management, Rahul Roy Chowdhury, discusses the intention of web apps to bridge the gap between native apps and the web. And it seems only a very small percentage of people used packaged Chrome apps.
What are Chrome apps versus extensions web apps exactly? Because this is clearly passed by.
An extension would be something that sits up in the corner of your screen and is active on any web page you go to.
Right.
So that might be a thing that blocks adverts, or it might be a thing that fills in passwords for you or something like that.
Okay.
An application is like a website that you might go to.
But it doesn't look like
a browser after all.
Is it what I would understand to be a local web app? web app, yes, as not in well, all maybe the assets a packaged and resources web app are local on my machine.
Some of it might be local, some of it might not. But it's basically an app that runs inside a browser that is effectively like one whole tab or one whole window mm-hmm. of that thing. But it seems nobody uses that. People just go to websites or have local native apps for, you know, platforms.
I do use them a little bit. Like I've got I use the Telegram one, I think. But I say I think because I've just got it set to have a shortcut in the dash and I can't actually tell whether I've installed the Ubuntu version or whether it's still the web app.
That's probably Webagram going to a URL inside a browser. It's probably, I would imagine, not an app inside Chrome that Chrome knows as an application. It's just a URL you happen to go to that you've got a shortcut link to, right?
I don't know what the difference is.
This is part of the reason why, because it's not immediately clear to users, you know, what benefit these applications are giving them.
So if I go to Chrome:// apps, it shows me all my installed apps. Mm-hmm. And I have Web Store, Google Calendar, Kindle, Cloud Reader, Google Docs, Google Drive, Scribble, Stickies on something, Google Search, YouTube, TweetDeck. I use TweetDeck a lot. But I don't understand, like as Martin says, why that's not just a web page.
Well, it is that as well. But this is like, it's a store, you know, where you could install these web apps. But anyway, it's going away. So goodbye, that thing.
Yeah.
I'm suspicious, but okay.
Sorry, I've got to switch back again now. And finally, Linux is 25 years old.
Hey.
Wow. Old enough to rent a car in the US.
Yep, without extra insurance. Yes.
I still feel like Linux is this young, youthful thing.
The new hotness.
You are old.
Yeah, it does feel like it's the new hotness, and now I just feel even more old and busted than I did in the first place.
But you can sing happy birthday to it now.
You can. And Red Hat did, in fact, didn't they?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And they didn't get sued.
Yeah.
Hey.
Yeah.
So far.
Yeah. Because some people have fought and won the kind of ability to put happy birthday into the public domain.
Yep.
And they've now been rewarded with money.
Hooray. Yep.
From all the lawyers Warner are Chappell. Rich. Brilliant. But ignoring that, happy birthday is in the public domain, just like it should have been dozens of years ago.
And was.
Yeah.
It seems.
Anyway, that's all of the news.
And now it's time for some community news and events. So Canonical has become a patron of KDE EV, which is a company that supports KDE, I think?
Yes. Well, a not-for-profit that, you know, manage the organization of KDE, yes. Yep. So, yes, Canonical now throws a small bag of money at KDE EV to get them to continue doing what they're doing, which is good.
Yes. Cool.
Are KDE like contributors, or do they have some sort of influence on what they would consider upstream Qt?
I believe so. I think there's some quite close sort of interaction between the like KDE library development and the Qt library development.
Right. Well, that makes sense,
I mean, this is based on my feeling of the KDE community when I used to use KDE about 5 years ago. So things, well, this isn't based on first-hand knowledge, but I think the answer to that is yes, to some extent.
Right. Well, this would be savvy then, wouldn't it? As Ubuntu absolutely becomes a more Qt-orientated platform.
Yep.
Next up, Canonical's Robert Ansell has announced Snapd glib.
What's that then?
Well, following discussions at the Snappy Sprint, Robert has created a library that allows glib-based projects to easily access Snapd. So Snapd is the daemon that is running on your local machine behind a Unix domain socket, and it has a RESTful API, and you can do things like ask it to tell you all of the available snaps in the store, or the ones that are installed locally, or the ones that need updating, or to install an app or remove an app. And Robert has created a library to abstract all of that in a simple way. And because it's glib based, you can either bind to it in native C or just about all the other languages. And he announced it on the mailing list, and he's also written a blog post. And on the mailing list, he gives a Python snippet, and in his blog post, he gives a very detailed set of C examples. So
does this mean you could make a store front end or modify an existing store front end to query snaps and install them and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, exactly that. So the way I intend to use this is through its Python bindings, which are Gobject introspection, so that through the Software Boutique, we can expose snaps in the Software Boutique. And there's also bindings for Vala, because the other people that were interested in this was Daniel, Cody and Cortin from Elementary Project. So they now have a mechanism for easily manipulating SnapD. And in the future, Robert's got plans to add support for Qt objects, so that Qt applications can also access this natively as well.
So at some point in the future, the theory is every store or shop front that is on any Linux distro will have the ability to install snaps by using this library to poke at the SnapD daemon underneath.
This is a universal interface to get at snaps. Yeah.
Sweet. Next up, GNOME Weather. It has stopped working, apparently, and the weather has stopped. There is no more weather. And this is, we believe, as a result of an API change in the third party where GNOME Weather application gets its weather data from. So it's a desktop application that goes off to the internet to some third party service, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA, and something's changed at their end. And this kind of has flashbacks of the GNOME Maps screw up that happened a few months ago, where the mapping provider that GNOME Maps was using changed their API terms and shut down the service for, you know, free applications. So GNOME had to modify the application so that it could use a different provider or whatever.
At the time, didn't they talk about a way of mitigating this problem in the future?
Yeah, I actually think what they've done is they've put a proxy in GNOME infrastructure.
Right.
Which I think they can then use to redirect maps to other services. Maps to other services. And I suspect they'll do a similar kind of thing. Now they've learned from that problem of GNOME Maps, they'll probably do the same thing with GNOME Weather and redirect to, you know, whichever is the weather provider API du jour.
So the thing here is that this is an underlying library in GNOME. It's libgweather or libgnomeweather, and that was forked as libmarteweather. And it talks to the servers run by NOAA, which is the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. And specifically, these are the weather stations at airports around the world providing METAR weather data. METAR's a condensed format for extracting longhand weather data. And basically, they have moved where their API resides. So the old web URL no longer exists. It's moved to a new one. And some of the keys that you use in the API have changed names. So everything broke. And it's a relatively simple patch to get fixed. And I saw that GNOME have got patches now. We've applied the same patches in Mate, and it'll all be fixed soon. But it's somebody made a decision to change, and it just broke all the things.
Nice.
Right.
Good work.
And next up, there is a new application to set up and configure Razer keyboards on Linux.
Razer keyboards? They sound dangerous.
They're high-end gaming keyboards with light-up keys and touch screens and all sorts of
And they make lovely clacky gubbins. Noises.
I'm not sure if they're clacky or not. They don't look like they're like big buckling spring type things, but that might be an option. But they're focused on looking awesome and having like macro keys that you can bind to do lots of things at once with a single key press. And
so this
like
tool configures the keyboard because it's got a little bit of intelligence in the keyboard, doesn't it?
Yeah, so it can. I think you can configure the macros and you can configure the displays and the light, like the colours of the keys where that's an option and things like that.
Yeah, I was really pleased to see this get covered more widely because this has been developed by Luke Horwell, who is a senior vice president of nearly all the things in Ubuntu Mate. So he's one of the key developers in Ubuntu Mate, and this has been a side project of his for about a year or so now. And he was as pleased as punch to see that somebody had picked up on this. So,
is this just reverse engineering the API, or has he been working with the Razer?
You know what? I've got no idea. I don't have a keyboard like this, but I know it's something that Luke has been working on because he got one of these keyboards and he wanted to unlock all of the features. So I think he's created the front end and basically hooked it up to some existing utilities that other people had created probe the keyboard at the back end. Yeah.
Yeah. Nice.
Cool.
So we have an open source alternative to Evernote and other similar apps called Turtle, and it's freely available for Windows, Mac, Linux and Android, and our iOS coming soon.
And this is a desktop app that allows you to take notes.
Yes.
Yes.
And stores them and syncs them and has an encrypted back-end server where it stores them.
Ooh, what there is it? Can you host the server yourself, or are you syncing them to other people?
There is a free hosted option at the moment, and you can also host it yourself.
Yep, and they're stored encrypted.
Brilliant,
Evernote, and it has Markdown support.
That's good.
I know several people who swear by Evernote. I've never really got that.
I use Evernote.
Okay.
And I would like to find something better because I obviously in the distant past, I used to put all my notes on my Palm PDA, which might come back. But more recently, I've been using Evernote, but I'd quite like to shift away from Evernote. But it's finding something that I can read my notes on every single device is the problem.
Yeah. Maybe you could compile Turtle for your Palm.
Ooh,
Ricky. So I've not really been an Evernote user. My wife uses it, but I've recently subscribed, and that's because of my switch to Ubuntu for devices. The notes app on Ubuntu syncs with Evernote.
That's why I subscribed
to all of my stuff. I've signed up to Evernote so I can access it from everywhere.
Yeah. Sweet.
It's me. Ray Shambrook from Canonical's design team has published a report on user testing for online status display.
I thought this was quite an amusing blog post because she's written a nice blog post. She's a visual designer, apparently, and she wouldn't normally do usability research, and we should have someone dedicated to that. But there wasn't anybody available, so she had a question to answer about online status displaying in, I think it's a phone app.
Messaging app.
App. And she's gone through and because she's new to it, she's documented sort of what she did, and she's really clearly said why they did everything, what the purpose of it was, what they did, how she did it, what they decided. And then all the comments that I've read so far at the bottom are just arguing over where the green dot should go in the design. Oh, it's like, that's not the point of the article.
I'd put the buttons on the left.
It is.
Yeah, everyone has an opinion.
Next up, Mark.
Pasi Lalino. Oh dear, sorry, my finish isn't that good. Lalino, there we go, from the Zubuntu team, has published a WordPress theme for Ubuntu community websites, which is nice.
Cool.
So if you're running a WordPress website and you're Ubuntu related, you can now have it looking all Ubuntu-y. Yes.
So yeah, it looks kind of like the actual Ubuntu website.
Oh, could we do that?
We could. And actually, we tested it, an early version of it.
Way back.
Oh, we did.
We gave some feedback, and that went into the current version. But no, we're not
currently
using it.
Maybe for season 10.
The season 10. Of double digits.
The big baby.
Ubuntu 16.10 wallpaper contest is now open for entries. So get to designing wallpapers.
Yep. Mm. If you can make nice pictures or take photographs of nice things, then contribute something gorgeous.
Or take nice photos of horrible things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also open is the Ubuntu 16.10 Free Culture Showcase. Now, I'd like to know more about this. Who knows more about this?
So the Free Culture Showcase is a contest to replace the contents of the example content folder.
Ah, right.
Which is just a folder that sits in your home directory by default. And
is that this still shipped on proper it. Ubuntu?
Yes, and so this is to replace that. We'll probably talk more about that in a later episode.
Excellent. Yep. And finally, Yakety Yak Beta 1 has been released for the participating flavours.
Right. Get testing, people.
Yeah, please get testing. Please do. Yeah.
And now we've got some events very quickly. We have Barcamp Manchester, which is a two-day unconference to share your knowledge, inspire people and learn new things at City Labs in Manchester on the 24th and 25th of September. Martin.
Next, it's the Teletext and Digitizer Festival. It's the ultimate digitizer celebration we do. It's at the Centre of Computing History in Cambridge on Saturday the 1st of October, and maybe the day after if people may meet for breakfast.
And the CLSX Europe, the Community Leadership Conference, Community Leadership Summit Europe 2016, and it brings together community leaders, organisers, managers, projects and organisations that are interested in growing and empowering a strong community. And that's in London on Sunday the 16th of October 2016.
We've got the Egg and Raspberry Jam coming up. This theme is winter fun, so Halloween, bonfire night and cold weather. Come and see and learn about robotics, programming, electronics, development and creativity. It's on Sunday the 16th of October between 2 and 5 p.m. at the Gartner offices in Staines-upon-Thames.
And there's a mini DebConf Cambridge, 2 days mini DebConf, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, Sunday. And this is at Cambridge, England, on the 10th to the 13th of November.
Very long URL, which we'll have in the show notes.
And finally, UbuCon Europe, the very first European Ubuntu conference, announced in November, the 18th to 20th, at Unperfect House in Essen, Germany. And that's all the events.
We love getting your feedback, so please send it to us. Even the pointlessly mean stuff makes us laugh. If it's short, tweet us on @UbuntuPodcast. If it's less short, but please no essays, email us on show@UbuntuPodcast.org. If you'd like to discuss some of the things we talk about with other listeners, post on our shiny new subreddit at reddit.com/r/UbuntuPodcast. Or you can just leave a comment on the relevant show notes on our website, UbuntuPodcast.org.
And that's all for episode 27. We'll be back next week when we'll be discussing Distro Death. And we'll bring you some command line.
That's the name of my new metal band.
No, it's a new distro. It's not aiming for a long life cycle, really. Yes. Golly.
Yes.
God, that was a, that was a packed show, wasn't it? Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
All right. See you next week.
See you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
My lasagna now.